Blog Talk Radio.
The sun go down and lulls us to our sleep. Beloved who makes the earth so round about the sun to sleep. Mother who speaks her words in the silent moonlit night above.
Blog Talk Radio and the Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friend and co-host, Andre Rodatis. Hi, Andre.
Hello, Paula. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's another fine Saturday morning and here in Colorado, and a little cloudy, but they're forecasting spring, so
really,
I'm hoping that spring is going to come. My husband Glenn keeps telling me, you know, we got to get over this March weather soon. So
yeah,
we'll see. Maybe summer's really going to happen, but it's been
well.
Cool.
At least these days you're down below. You used to live up Coal Creek Canyon.
Yeah,
and Jim Downs last Sunday. Or actually Tuesday, I think he said. When did we have that snow? Was it Tuesday?
It was last weekend, yeah.
It was last
Mother's
weekend.
Day, and yeah.
Yeah. He was telling me they got 20 inches up there.
20 inches.
20
you know,
inches.
I lived there at 8,200 feet, friends, 8,200 feet above sea level, and I lived there for 23 years. And my husband and I simultaneously decided it was time to move down hills, and we've never regretted that, not for a minute. So, yeah, it was, my heart goes out to Jim. He's a hardy sort that lives up that high. Lenny and Susan, some other friends live up that high, and it's a lifestyle. You live up in the mountains. You're surrounded by beauty, you know, but one thing that I've noticed, and I was born and raised in this area, along the Front Range, and when we moved down out of the mountains, I had forgotten how special and incredible it was to look up and see that amazing range of mountains, that Front Range, and just the cloud formations over it. And, you know, when you're in the mountains, you really don't see them like you do when you're at the foot of them. So I had missed that view, and I never get tired of that. It's like a view of the ocean. You know, I imagine people who live close to the ocean, and I certainly never get tired of seeing the ocean. So,
yeah.
It fills your soul. Something about it,
sure
it fills
does.
Your soul.
Yeah. So I'm all signed up for IC-14 as of a week ago or whatever, and finally getting there, and you know, for anybody that hasn't thought to do it, I know there's still plenty of room, and hopefully we get plenty of people interested. Not to just change the subject on you, it just occurred to me in terms of good times and get-togethers and everything else. That's coming up July 23rd in Amherst, Massachusetts, and I just wanted to share that I'm excited to be going. So,
something that people may not know about you, Rancher Book Readers, and it's an interesting thing, and that is that we know each other because we found this book, the Urantia book, and we read it, and it changed our lives in every possible way. I mean, we all share this experience where we found this book, read it, and went, oh my gosh, I can't be the only one reading this book, and I simply have to find others who read it as well, because I want to talk to somebody about it. And talking to people who have never read it is not satisfying, really, because they don't get what you're talking about, and maybe they doubt right off the bat that, you know, you're reading this book that claims to have authors like angels and Melchizedek, and they're like, oh, sure, you know. So you can't necessarily talk to them. You have to find somebody to talk to about it. Well, most of us wrote to the publisher, and I like to point out to people, you know, how many books do you have on your shelf at home where it ever occurred to you to write the publisher to see who else reads it?
Right.
I mean, most books you never...
Yeah.
But we simply found each other. Well, the result of that is that we're spread out all over the world. And some of us are lucky, like you and I, Andre. We get to be in a community of students of the Urantia book for many, many years. For 40 years, we've studied weekly. We've had weekly fellowship, and we've enjoyed so many wonderful associations because of it. But many people are out in the middle of nowhere, and there isn't a study group, say, for 100 miles. And and they just have to study alone, or, you know, thank God now they can get online. But the international conferences are something that the Urantia Book Fellowship, formerly the Urantia Brotherhood, have been doing every 3 years regularly since 76. And even before that, they were meeting, you know, in Chicago. So it's a pilgrimage of sort, and I know that a lot of people can't afford it. It's not an easy thing to do, and my heart goes out to you if you would love to be there and you can't afford it. You're with us in spirit. It's important that we get at least once every 3 years get to come and look in each other's faces.
Yeah.
You know, it is
important. That's the bottom line on it. But the other thing is, not only to go and look at each other's face, not only to be able to talk to somebody about the Urantia book who knows what you're talking about, but there's this other phenomenon that happens, and that is that because people know, you know, what you're studying and believe in what you're studying and make it a central part of their life, you start on a higher foundation for your relationship. Mm-hmm. It's much, much easier to get to know Urantia Book Readers for other Urantia Book Readers. I mean, I'm sure that's true in a lot of spiritual fellowships, but this is, it's way different. It's like all of a sudden you have a language, a lexicon that binds you together, and you know where you're going. You all have a very similar orientation, and you know, I could go on and on and on, but that it's that higher foundation that really captures me. You know, you meet somebody, and all of a sudden, for one thing, you're, besides being interested in wanting to strike up a relationship, the interest is even quickened by the fact that you can strike it up so much faster.
Right. And you already know that this book has already penetrated the truth of the fact so deeply into your heart that you are a sibling a cosmic sibling, and this other person is as well. And so you have this sense that you are, in fact, meeting a brother or sister. And, you know, sometimes we hesitate to express fully our love for one another because, and I'm just talking about humans in general, because, you know, we're not sure how that'll be received. You know, if it'll be taken the wrong way, like, well, what do you want from me? You know, the world has gotten jaded and suspicious. And in a sense, you know, if you've read the Urantia book, that kind of takes that away from you, and now you're more open to just expressing your love. And you, so there's not so many hurdles to jump over, and it feels pretty good to be able to relate to your brothers and sisters on a deeper level, on a just openly and with love and affection. And That feels pretty good. And, just so people know, when I say Andre is my dear friend, I met him, I think, in 1980 at the very first study group I ever went to. I started going to a study group in 78. I found the Urantia book in 76. And we met at Joanne Weidman's study group.
Right.
And you know,
December 80, January 81, right there. Yeah.
When you start to study this book, you know, there it goes to an even deeper level. It's one thing to meet and discuss, but when you really get together like we do every Saturday morning and study these teachings and share your insights with each other, wow, then you're... So that's just a little by way of saying, you know, people tell me, gosh, I wish I could come to the international conference this summer in Amherst, Massachusetts. And I tell them, well, you know, I wish you could too. And if there's a way, you know, if there's a will, there's a way. And it's a pilgrimage. And so if you're going to come, I'm glad you're coming. And if you can't make it this time, well, we'll see you next time. And there's other opportunities to gather with readers. And I hope you get that chance because it really is a treat.
Yes, it really is. And you know, I might also put in a plug, you know, it's still not too late. If you can't get to that one, there is the wonderful study group symposium being put on by Urantia Association International up in Madison, Wisconsin, June 11th to 15th. And it's not the same kind of thing. I wouldn't forego the IC in order to go to it, but if you're a study group leader and you know you can't make it in July, but you have June open, that's going to be that's only, you know, 4 weeks away at this point, a little less than 4 weeks away. And it should be, you know, Gaetan Charlot and a number of people, some of my wonderful fellow readers from Quebec are going to be at that one in Madison. I saw the first version of this presentation and symposium in just a one-day workshop that he gave in French in Saint-Jérôme in Quebec, and it was wonderful. You know, the Quebec readership really takes studying this thing seriously. I mean, were 26 reader, believer, study group leaders that showed up to this symposium on a Saturday. Our good friend Diane Lebrecq was there, and it was November, a year and a half ago. And I was so impressed with the thoughtfulness of what it takes to, you know, put on a good study group and make it good, and all the different varieties of making it good that I'm going up for seconds in English this time, and it will prove to be even more developed, I'm sure. It's right now I think there's about 100 people going up. And I know that the IC is going to be much better attended than that by you know, a few factors at least. But goodness gracious, if you can get to one or the other or both I'm getting to both.
Yay, lucky you.
Yeah, well, I tell you what, if you'd asked me 6 months ago whether I thought I would have wherewithal or anything else to do that, I don't know. I've come back to Colorado and a number of things have just fallen into place and allowing me to do it. So anyway, if I sound over-enthusiastic and all, well, I guess it's part and parcel of the fact that here on the Cosmic Citizen, we understand that, you know, all men and women are our brothers and sisters, and this fellowship of believers means that if you're in this fellowship of believers, you at least understand that. That's the other piece of this, isn't it? That's the other piece of that foundation, is you know where you're going, you know that your brothers and sisters are on the way, and you're in this together. I mean, goodness gracious, sis, we're on the way. You know, it sounds a little hokey, but it's also true. But, you know, we're on the way to eternity together, and our paths are going to interweave back and forth. You know, all through eternity, I'm going to know this person named Paula Thompson. I'm going to know this guy that I had this wonderful conversation with named Bro Dave. You know, and who I tune into his program on Blog Talk here. You know, every once in a while, whenever I have a Saturday or Sunday afternoon free, I tune in because talk about a guy who's switched on for the revelation.
Talk about it.
You know, I love Bro Dave.
Me too.
You know, there's no one that I can think of that is. I mean, he's put on 366 shows. Okay.
Isn't that awesome?
He's put on 366 shows for the revelation. and you know, a lot of it is reading and commentary. It's so simple. It's a half-hour program, but it's beautiful. And God only knows how many people he's led to a better understanding of their relationship with Jesus because of it. So hats off to you, bro. You know, I'm just in awe. My hat's off to you today.
And my hat's off to Bro Dave and our good friend God's Gumshoe, who comes on every Sunday and does a show from the Old Testament Bible and compares it with the Urantia book. I mean, he's a true Bible scholar. And, you know, what maybe a lot of people don't realize is the Bible and the Urantia book are simpatico. It's like General Dwayne Faw used to say, and his dad and his granddad were both ministers. He grew up reading the Bible. I mean, the Bible was like another, you know, his constant companion in life. He told me his dad would read from the Bible to them every single moment, but he wouldn't read from just one version. He would read from many different ones, and he would say things like, now the King James Version says this, but I prefer the American New Standard with this particular passage, you know, and so he grew up realizing that there was more than one interpretation to the Bible, and he used to say that the Urantia book makes my Bible come alive, and that's so true, and I think God's Gumshoe really illustrates that. So that's another offering on Blog Talk for people. If you really feel like you need to know the Bible better, God's Gumshoe can really help you with that if you're a Urantia book reader, and even if you're not, if you're just interested in the Bible, tune into God's Gumshoe on Sunday. And then we've got Symmetry of Soul, which is a really in-depth study of the Urantia book. So for those people who really want to go deeper with the teachings of the book, Symmetry of Soul is another offering, and that happens on Tuesday. And there's just the internet has opened up so many wonderful avenues for the dissemination of profound truth. And you know, wherever you are, if you're holding up truth and you're holding up your passion and the light of your life and the light of your heart, God bless you for that. You know, the world needs more of that. More people who live for light and life and get over the obsession that the world seems to have with darkness and death. Enough darkness and death. Let's start thinking about light and life.
You heard it here probably not first, but you heard it here. Enough with darkness and death.
Enough. We're done with that. Thinking about light and life. And the Urantia book is all about light and life. And the reality of endless life, and the fact that we are not alone in the universe. Our planet is not some forgotten little orb that the rest of the universe cares nothing about. We have been in isolation, but it's for very important, specific reasons. They're, you know, every indication to me is that they're getting ready to welcome us back into the family of worlds. And, you know, in many instances they talk about, you know, normal worlds. I think we've covered in the last few episodes why our world is a little not normal. And I think I even said I find comfort in that, because I don't want to think that other worlds have to struggle the way we have. You know, ever since I was a small child, I believed in the reality of life on other worlds. I never doubted it, never, since I was 10 years old. I had a real epiphany about it when I was 10, and I said to the universe, I know you're out there. And I'm willing to believe that there's a 50% chance that life on other worlds is even better than life on this world, and that there's not monsters on every world in space. In fact, maybe we're the monsters. I really did think that. I thought maybe we're the monsters, and they don't come here because they're afraid of us. Even at 10, I knew there's something different about this world. We're not very nice to each other. And so, you know, this exploration that we're taking in this journey of life after life, which is in fact paper 47, gets into the seven mansion worlds. Jesus said, in my Father's kingdom are many mansions. And you know, certainly they use that word, many mansions, dwelling places for us as his children, as we ascend through time and space. And he didn't create us and then forget us. He didn't create us and then hate us. He created us. He loves us. He's prepared a way for us. He's prepared a life for us, an ascension career, because he gave us the mandate to be perfect, even as he is perfect. And so off we go. You know, this is about our journey, our ascension into the great beyond. And this life is not the end; it's only the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've read the Urantia book, I can say probably uncategorically, you believe that. You know that the Urantia book is one of those things that will make you believe it. And it does it. It doesn't do it by asking you to suspend logic. It does it by affirming probably what you already knew in your deepest logical self.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, you know, to your earlier point, you know, it's really funny. Dave Tucker and I were, you know, on the board, were in sync. I was looking at the quote, and he just posted it, and boom. You know, this business of how do you view the world? So as you view the world, remember that the black patches of evil which you see are shown against a white background of ultimate good. You do not merely view white patches of good which show up miserably against a black background of evil.
Right.
You know, as we pursue this, you know, there... I have to share, you know, I heard, you know, I'm hearing some, you know, disturbing interpretation sometimes of how people view our approach to God. And while, you know, we know that some of what they're saying in the Havona worlds, you know, that we're going to be, on a billion worlds, and it's going to take getting through 895 million of those worlds before we see the Father. So we know that's not easy. But, you know, I don't know that there's any particular value in focusing on it not being easy.
Uh-huh.
You know?
That's kind of a waste of time.
You know, aside from saying, you know, I mean, because last night, you know, I was... I was just listening to some talk about that, and as I was listening, I came back to another piece that was being talked about, and that was, I mean, I just turned to page 1113 in the book, which is the real nature of religion, you know, and in that, they talk about the faith of Jesus. And, you know, I hate to digress so much, but on the other hand, you know what? I just got to get this out because it really disturbed me. There was talk about you know, it being so hard to you know, really approach God. And if you want God in your life, be ready for some really tough stuff. And I agree that, you know, it's not going to be a royal road. You pick a faith road, and you're going to be called very often to maintain that faith in the face of many kind of indignities and things that, like Jesus did. You know, we should be so fortunate to be as tested as Jesus was. But and when we never will be. None of us will ever be tested as he was in this life. But here's what came to me as a counter to that, because the authors are not trying to really dissuade us, you know, they're not trying to dissuade us, but, you know, they're not trying to attract us with vinegar and, you know, and say, you know, it's going to be tough, so get with it, be a Marine, you know. they're telling in Paper 101, you know, Section 6, the last paragraph, paragraph 17 on 113, paragraph 6, 1113, sorry, paragraph 6, through the appropriation of the faith of Jesus, mortal man can foretaste in time the realities of eternity. Mm. Jesus made the discovery in human experience of the final Father. The final Father. Mm. The infinite God. And his brothers in the flesh of mortal life can follow him along this same experience of Father discovery. He didn't do it to say, nah, 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 I can do what you can't. You know?
Right.
He did it to show us we can do it. All we have to do is do what he did, maintain unbroken communion. Try, when we break it, get back to it. We're going to have broken communion. So what?
Right.
Reestablish communion with the Father. Be in touch with Father. Have that faith relationship. They can even attain, as they are, the same satisfaction in this experience with the Father as did Jesus as he was.
Right. I mean, he's the ultimate way shower for us.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was just reading, for the first time in my life, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. And, of course, you know, it's about a guy who is in a concentration camp in Nazi Germany, and he survives, and he went on to really explore psychologically why he survived and why those who survived survived. And he says that the one thing that the survivors all had in common was that they could see themselves in the future. They could see a future for themselves. They could transcend this moment, this adversity, this pain, this suffering, and see that they had a life in the future, something to live for, something to hope for. And he said the thing that kills them inevitably is when they lose hope and they give up. He said you could, you know, in camp life, you could see it over and over again. They would just lay down, and they didn't care if the the bosses of the camp beat them. They just gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't care anymore because they had no hope and they couldn't see themselves past this adversity. They got stuck
right
there. And
yeah,
it's so, you know, it's so true. That one of the things that I love about the Urantia books so very much is that it gives you hope. Hope for the world, hope for the universe, hope for humanity, hope for your children, hope that there is life after death, hope that there's meaning and purpose and value in everything you do. And nothing of value is ever lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, hope is a good thing.
Yeah,
reminds me
hope
of one of my favorite movies, Shawshank Redemption. Hope is a good thing.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe
it
is
yeah
the best of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a beautiful movie. And,
mm-hmm,
and you know, that's the what you state about hope. You know, that's all we're called to, is just have faith and trust. You know, that was the essence, the keynote of the third revelation of Melchizedek 4,000 years ago. And that's a pretty good, solid foundation for moving forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, this quote, you know, continues to capture that, you know, and I'm just going to dwell on this as a precursor. What occurs to me with this is that this really, you know, this fits right in with our mansion world experience. This is what we're going to be discovering both in this life and progressively in the next life, is that faith in the Father works. It's what carries us forward. It's what gives us these higher and better and more meaningful and more valuable relationships with each other that are based first and foremost in love, and not on the premise that I better take care of myself or I better protect myself first because nobody else will. It's exactly
right,
the opposite. The universe, the Father, has got our back. And so we don't need to worry about that. We can have the luxury of focusing on others because we are taken care of. If we choose the greater thing, the lesser is included.
Yeah.
Choose to love. Self-protection is taken care of by the Father. You don't have to worry. It doesn't matter that Jesus was put on a cross. He knew that that was not the end. He knew that it was part of the unfolding of a beautiful revelation of love and light to all of us. And here we are today, 2,000 years later, you know, soaking it in and perhaps benefiting and moving forward because of it. So new potentials were actualized in the universe of Nebadon, consequent upon the terminal bestowal of Michael. And one of these was the new illumination of the path of eternity that leads to the Father of all, and which can be traversed even by the mortals of material flesh and blood in the initial life on the planets of space. Jesus was and is the new and living way whereby man can come into the divine inheritance which the Father has decreed shall be his for but the asking.
For
in
but the
Jesus,
asking.
Yeah, all we got to do is ask, have that faith and trust, and we're on our way. In Jesus, there is abundantly demonstrated both the beginnings and endings of the faith experience of humanity, even of divine humanity. Well,
yeah,
that should launch us, and that's the thread. You know, if we were traveling this mansion world experience in complete darkness, okay, and we're not, but if we were, if the light somehow got turned out, the thread of light that we could follow would be the life of Jesus and his faith. And
yeah,
understanding all we have to do is move forward in the same way that he did, not knowing every step of the way, but trusting that the Father is guiding us. And with that, let's move forward.
Okay.
Do you want to read
nice
it?
Nice segue. we are, so just so for our listeners, we'll know we're on paper, we're reading paper 47 from the Urantia book. The paper is called The Seven Mansion Worlds. I believe we're on Section 8, The Sixth Mansion World, right? Is that right?
Yeah.
Did we leave off there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you're listening to The Cosmic Citizen on Blog Talk Radio. And if you want to give us a call, you can. Let's read this section first, though. The call-in number is 646-716-8158. Okay, so here we go. The Sixth Mansion World. Sojourners on this sphere are permitted to visit Transition World Number 6, where they learn more about the high spirits of the super universe, although they are not able to visualize many of these celestial beings. Here they also receive their first lessons in the prospective spirit career which so immediately follows graduation from the Urantia training of the local universe. The assistant system sovereign makes frequent visits to this world. You know what? I think we read this one last week. I remember that.
Did we already get this far?
Yeah, okay. We did.
We may have.
So sorry,
friends. Because
we may
have talked about adjuster fusion, yeah.
I think we did, yeah. Well, so we're wanting
to push sorry to talk about adjuster fusion again because nobody wants to think about their eternal union with a fragment of the Father, do they?
No.
Oh, hey, yeah, they do.
On second thought. But we'll just move on because we want to see if we can finish this paper this week. So we're to section 9. If you're with us on paper 47, skip forward to section 9, the seventh mansion world. Okay.
Here we go.
The experience of this sphere is the crowning achievement of the immediate post-mortal career. During your sojourn here, you will receive the instruction of many teachers, all of whom will cooperate in the task of preparing you for residence on Jerusalem. Any discernible differences between those mortals hailing from the isolated and retarded worlds and those survivors from the more advanced and enlightened spheres are virtually obliterated during the sojourn on the seventh mansion world. Here you will be purged of all the remnants of unfortunate heredity, unwholesome environment, and unspiritual planetary tendencies. The last remnants of the mark of the beast are here eradicated. While sojourning on Mansonia Number 7, permission is granted to visit Transition World Number 7, the world of the Universal Father. Here you begin a new and more spiritual worship of the Unseen Father, a habit you will increasingly pursue all the way up through your long ascending career. You find the Father's temple on this world of transitional culture, but you do not see the Father. Now begins the formation of classes for graduation to Jerusalem. You have gone from world to world as individuals, but now you prepare to depart for Jerusalem in groups. Although with certain limits, an ascender may elect to tarry on the seventh mansion world for the purpose of enabling a tardy member of his earthly or Mansonia working group to catch up with him. The personnel of the seventh mansion, Mansonia, assemble on the area of glass to witness your departure for Jerusalem with residential status. Hundreds of thousands of times you may have visited Jerusalem, but always as a guest. Never before have you proceeded toward the system capital in the company of a group of your fellows who are bidding the eternal farewell to the whole Mansonia career as ascending mortals. You will soon be welcomed on the receiving field of the headquarters world as Jerusalem citizens. You will greatly enjoy your progress through the seven dematerializing worlds. They are really demortalizing spheres. You are mostly human on the first mansion world, just a mortal being minus a material body, a human mind housed in a Marantxa form. A material body of the Marantxa world, but not a mortal house of flesh and blood. You really pass from the mortal state to the immortal status at the time of adjuster fusion. And by the time you have finished the Gerasim career, you will be full-fledged Marantxans.
Wow.
There's so many things in that that I love.
Why don't you tackle one of the first things? No, go ahead, sis. I've got a ton of things, too.
The sentiment involved in this statement that, okay, so now we've been through this whole career where we've gone through these mansion worlds, and the whole process is to eradicate these vestiges of mortal beingness, you know, and animal fear and you know, the spirit poisons. Probably we've eliminated so many of them, and we're you know, we've come through this whole process of seven worlds and this training, and we're ready to graduate and go to the next world, which is a big achievement. I mean, it's huge. And we're fully cognizant, we're fully conscious that this is what's happening. And the sentiment of waiting, of waiting for someone you love dearly to catch up because you want to go with them.
Don't you have the vision of somebody, you know, they're wearing their shorts and their technical t-shirt and they're just you know, 50 yards from the finish line, and they've got their hands stretched out back, and they say, come on, catch up, we can go together, we'll cross together. You know, that's a wonderful, for some of us running the Boulder next weekend, you know, it's just, if there's something wonderful as a symbol, you know, just participating with a mass of human beings, and it's, of course, it's one of the biggest races in the country, you know, with over 50,000, I think, participants usually every year. It just gives you that sense of, you know, you're all trying to meet a goal, and it's not anything like the goal of trying to make your Mansonias and you know, step by step progress through the Marantxa career. But it's a wonderful symbol for understanding that, you know, we're all in this together. And when you're in a race, it's not a race against everybody. You know, it's a race with everybody. Everybody crossing the finish line is a great thing.
You know, that so reminds me of something, that an experience I had when I was a kid. My first job, I was a trail guide for a stable. It was called Gateway Stables, and I worked there for 4 years. I worked there from the time I was 12 until I was 16, and I was a trail guide. And, of course, I was crazy about horses, and I found that I had a gift with horses because I had a gentle hand with them. I was patient with them, and so I could ride the horses that other people couldn't ride because I was just patient with them. And I used to love to ride this trail. And one day I was just riding it by myself. We rode up onto the Hogbacks. There's a formation along the foothills of the Rocky Mountains that they call the Hogbacks, and they really do look like hogbacks. And real interesting formations and geologic formations. And Colorado is a geologist's dream anyway. But riding up this trail, and a whole herd of deer came running down the mountain. And so I stopped my horse, and I just watched this scene. They all ran up to this fence, and just gracefully, it was a barbed wire fence, you know, ranchers all use that kind of fencing, and they ran up to this fence, and they just glided over it. It wasn't even there, you know. The whole herd just glided over this fence, and one after another, sometimes two together, and the whole herd just jumped over this fence, and then the last one, this baby, came up to the fence and stopped. And it was so endearing to me to watch these deer wait so patiently on the other side of this fence for this baby, dear, to find its courage to hurdle that fence. And they waited, they just stood there and patiently waited, and the baby would run and then stop and then go back and then run and then stop. And
wow.
And finally, after about the fifth try, just cleared it like it was nothing. And they all ran off together. But it was so endearing to me to see them, the whole herd, wait so patiently for the baby to find its, you know, its courage and its ability to clear that fence. Something
yeah.
I'll never forget. You know, even animals have that.
Yeah, they have to make that literally faith leap, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, talking about Marines, you know, none of us get out until all of us get out. You know, their whole philosophy of no one gets left behind. I love that. That's a deeply spiritual philosophy, really.
Yeah.
There's a lot of purpose in that, a lot of meaning and value in that. So. Well, what else about that section, Andre? What struck you?
Well, there's many, many things. One would be, excuse me, that this idea of the last remnants of the mark of the beast being eradicated, you know, this is not an easy process, but, you know, I don't see them as necessarily running you through the mill in order to eradicate this stuff. It's more a matter of exposing you to the spiritual counterpart that is a better behavior than that piece of character. You know, there's all kinds of things we do. I mean, let's just take a couple of things. You know, it's a very common thing for people to maybe want to gossip about other people. I think that's probably going to be gone long before the seventh Mansonia, but that's part of what goes on, and really, what is it? What is gossip? Gossip is thinking that it's okay for me to talk about somebody else because I have some knowledge and I like the thrill of talking about somebody else, or it doesn't even have to be, you know, self-deprecating of that person necessarily. But when you start thinking about that person as a brother or sister progressing with you, and you realize that they're in this race with you to the finish line as well, all of a sudden you realize maybe you do want to talk about them, but maybe you want to talk about them in a more loving way, and maybe you want to talk about them and, you know, what is it I can do for them? What is it what do you think we can do for them? They seem to be having so much struggle with being angry all the time, or they really seem to be in fear about this job interview coming up, or whatever it is. So that, you know, if we're thinking in those kinds of terms, then all of a sudden something that was perhaps a little more self-centered not necessarily leading to good, all of a sudden is spiritualized and turned to something that can be a lot more good. And I think that's what they do for us. I think they teach us all the way along upstep behaviors that maybe didn't work so well, or that caused us problems in the past, and take those to the next level and say, well, what about if you did this with that? You know, what about if you did some good for so-and-so instead of, you know, focusing on the ego snack that you get by imparting that story to somebody? So, it's something we all have to learn.
It is, and you get the sense as you're reading this that, you know, we've come through as individuals, but now we're getting ready to graduate as a group, and we visited Jerusalem, which, if you haven't read the Urantia book, is the system capital of our system of worlds. So it's a big milestone in this journey. It's like if you, you know, were able to see the whole world, and all of us have this sense of adventure. We all crave to see other lands, to know other people, to experience other cultures. You know, we all crave experience. And one of the reasons why universally most everybody loves to travel and go someplace new. I mean, it's fun to come home, but it's fun to go someplace new, too, and achieve something that you've never done before, experience something that has never happened to you before. Especially if it's educational or interesting and enlightening in some way. And so, you know, now you're getting ready to go as a group to this next level. And you've achieved something monumental, and you know it. It's like the feeling you get when you walk up on the stage and you get that diploma. And you work so hard for that. You know, it was 4 years of stalwart effort, and sometimes you felt like, I'm just not going to make it, but you dug down deeper, and you did it, and now you get the diploma, which says you did it, the same feeling that those young people get when they hand them that medal up on the stand at the Olympics. You did it, all those years of practice and effort. Here you go. You made it. It's like that. And you know, so many of them learn that lesson of teamwork. It's what you were alluding to, that you see how intricately connected you are to the rest of those ascenders, to the rest of humanity, to the rest of creation. That we get there together. And that they're all there to help us, and we're there to help them, and we do it together. And it's what a sweetness.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You bring up that idea of, you know, we get there together. You know, it's there's this beautiful. Beautiful quote in paper 25, section 4, that says, in the universal regime, you are not reckoned as having possessed yourself of knowledge and truth until you've demonstrated your ability and your willingness to impart this knowledge and truth to others. And, you know, what we learned just back a week or two ago when we were talking about that on Mansonia 4 is that by the time we get to Mansonia 4, we are getting to the point, if we haven't already gotten to the point, of wanting to do that, of having turned this around from being just, okay, I want to get this knowledge, I want to do this, I want to do that, to, oh, let me help you with that, you know, and and knowing that that's in large measure our ticket to ride, if you will. You know, that's how we go forward in the universe. So we could look at that in that selfish sense. Well, I'm not going to go forward unless I impart this knowledge. So I better get started doing that. there is that element, and we could look at it that way. But if you've ever had the experience of being with somebody who's hungry for that truth, or who desperately needs it because they're going through some life crisis, and you get a chance to impart some truth that they needed to hear, it so far transcends any sense of duty about it. All of a sudden, you see a light switch on. You see, oh my goodness, this truth really does work.
I just made
if you had
difference.
Any doubt, that doubt is washed away because, you know, people need to know, when they learn they're loved by God, and that that truth really, really does bring them in relationship to all other people, that if they start trying to live that way, life just gets better and better. That is a revelation. And that's a revelation most people on this planet don't have. It's a very simple one. And it's an easy one for any of us to impart as we pass by, just as Jesus did.
Well, and Jesus called that, what you just described, as maybe helping somebody along the way, that service ministry, let's say, as supremely satisfying. Supreme satisfaction. To help your fellows in their efforts to find the satisfactions of living. That in itself is supremely satisfying. We have a caller. Let's take a caller, Andre.
Sounds good.
Area code 714.
Blog Talk.
Hi, Paula and Andre.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, it's Dave Tucker.
Oh,
hey,
hi, Dave Tucker.
How are you guys doing?
We're
good. Nice to hear you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for taking the call.
Of course.
I was just listening, and it's beautiful. I'm loving the message. And I think it's so enthralling to know that it's really going to take 100% effort from each of us. I mean, we have the sincerity has to be there. And there's an eightfold path to progress that we're given in the revelation, and that is effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress. And so we're given instructions, so to speak, on how to handle each of life's circumstances. And I so frequently find myself falling short of my ideals or aspirations, but by having that eightfold path that we're given in the Urantia book, I always am able to say, okay, well, I got to go back to effort. effort is the very first step. You know, when I find myself off the path, I got to go to effort. And it's wonderful because when you do that, you almost have this sense or I get the sense that, you know, that God's meeting me halfway. You know, the effort I'm given, I'm also receiving. It's that, you know, upward grasp and downward reached approach that God gives to us simultaneously as we're reaching for Him.
So true.
Yeah.
You know, what you just said reminds me of that great quote that, you know, that Jesus, of course, Jesus said, "Come to me, all you who labor and are weary, and I will give you rest, spiritual strength." But this quote from paper 34, I think it's from the Universe Mother Spirit paper, it says, "Having started out on the way of life everlasting, having accepted the assignment and received your orders to advance, do not fear the dangers of human forgetfulness and mortal inconstancy. Do not be troubled with doubts of failure or by perplexing confusion. Do not falter and question your status and standing, for in every dark hour, at every crossroad in the forward struggle, the Spirit of Truth will always speak, saying, 'This is the way.'"
Amen to that, right?
Yeah.
We have all the help we need to get there, but we have to supply the requisite will to get her done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
Well, you know, a friend of mine says, you know, really what we're being called to do is just show up, you know, in the broad sense of that term. If our willingness is there, if we're willing to just show up, you know, to be present to God and to others in that way, you know, great things happen, and they begin to happen in the way our dear departed friend Clyde Bedell used to say. You know, big things start small. And, you know, just making a small start, just making a small start to try to love one more person that seems to be just a slight irritation in the office, you know, just putting them in your prayer circle, seeing what it is you can do. All of these things make a difference, both for them, for you, and for the world as a whole. You know, this world gets better one person at a time. And that's all we're doing, is being called to make this world better one person at a time. Mm. We need to show up to do that and get beyond any kind of emotion sometimes that say, oh, bloody murder. Goodness gracious, why is so-and-so, yeah. And then all of a sudden maybe say, maybe time out, Andre, time out. Turn this around a little bit. What does that person need? Is that person really perhaps making a cry for help? You know, I know I've got that kind of situation going on right now with a person in the office, and it's a challenge. And, nevertheless, a good start is at least putting them in a prayer circle, you know, in your own heart, and just saying, okay, I do not see the whole picture. I do not see the whole picture of who this person is and what they've gone through in their life and what fears and what kind of needs are actuating their behavior, even though it seems to impact me negatively. Let me just see what I can do, if nothing else, not to be exacerbating the problem. You know, I can think at least negatively that way. But if I want to go the second mile, I can think positively. I can think, what could I possibly do that might take me to the next level? And regardless of how they respond to it, what is the next right thing for me to do?
Yeah. I agree.
That can make all the difference, yeah.
Well, and you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. I think here on this world, we're clamoring with each other. I mean, it's a difficult... personalities are the greatest challenge. And I think that's why everything that we know to be spiritual and true and beautiful and good, all of those fruits of the Spirit, they all have to do with relationships. That's where we really test out the spiritual thing. You know, mm-hmm. That's where it happens, is as we deal with each other. And so,
yeah,
there you go.
I just got to put a word out to our new friend Zhao Zhu, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, who's tuning in from Hong Kong today. Goodness gracious. Welcome to the Cosmic Citizen, and thank you so much for your comments on the board, and glad you're enjoying the show. We're all one big faith family here. You know, there's 7 billion plus of us here on this planet, and the Father loves each and every one of us as though we were his only child.
Yes.
But we're not. And it's still just as true as though we were. Isn't that amazing?
Well, you know, and we'll get through this together. We'll get through all of this. So, she says, or he, I'm sorry, forgive me, I'm not sure, my name sound like Xiao in English.
Xiao Yu.
S-H-A. Xiao Yu. Yeah. Xiao Yu. Welcome, Xiao Yu.
Well, welcome. Yeah.
He's very close.
My brother right now is finishing up an assignment teaching English in China. He's somewhere between Beijing and Shanghai. I can't remember where. He's also taught English in Guangzhou before, and so have. You know, it's a small world anymore. We're all connected all over the place.
We sure are. And we have Sean with us from England. Sean, welcome to the show again. It's good to have you listening. Wonderful to have you listening. So this is great. And, you know, just absolutely love doing this show every Saturday. And it's been a delight going through these mansion worlds again.
Yeah.
With you, Andre. And we miss Crystalline today. she's taking care of her mother. Her mother had foot surgery, so
yeah.
Prayers go out to Joan. The whole Beek family is a remarkable family. So they,
yeah,
you know, regular study group attendees, and the whole family reads your ranch book together, and they just have such a deep and abiding faith and love for each other. Always an inspiration
yeah.
to me. So one other thing I want to point out about this section, we can move on to the next section, but I just love the way they talk about we're dematerializing. Isn't that an interesting way to
yeah.
say it? We're dematerializing.
And
demortalizing too. You know, when we that kind of takes you back. You think demoralized? No, demortalizing.
So.
You had mentioned.
Really?
Was it you that said your Greek friend had said moro means?
No, that was Marantia, and that was looking at moro from Marantia, and it was meaning baby. So it
baby,
might not
right.
fit. Yeah, it might not fit this so much, but what's interesting here, the demortal.
Well, I was thinking about mortal. Yeah, more. There's that word again. But go ahead, demortal. To demortal.
Well, so what's mortal? Mortal means we die. So
right.
what does it mean to demortalize? It means to take away the possibility of ever dying. It's taking out that which within us causes us to die, which would not conduce to eternal life. So
mm-hmm.
as we dematerialize, which is also a wonderful thing in the context of how they present what a Marantia soul is, okay, Marantia being that interweaving of material and spirit reality where they say the warp is spiritual and the woof is material, we can imagine that soul stuff that we're made of as being largely material woof with just a few spiritual warp threads in there. But it's almost as though what they indicate as we go forward through the mansion worlds and the rest of the Marantia spheres, it's as though they weave in, as we weave in new spiritual threads into the warp, we need less unspiritual or material threads in the woof. So
mm-hmm.
we weave in a spiritual thread, and we slowly take out a material one that we no longer need. And we progress forward that way. And to me, that's just a fun analogy of how
mm-hmm.
we eventually move from being more material to more spiritual. And imagine how the cloth changes in appearance, too, as we
right.
do so.
Not needing so much form to hold our being. And,
yeah.
you know, as I think of, you know, in a way this life teaches us something about the material life, obviously, as we get older. And our bodies just start to feel more material, right? They start to feel,
yeah.
you become more conscious of the material body as you get older. It just feels harder to make it do what you want it to do without pain, without, you know, dysfunction. It gets, you know, it's almost like, just like, again, like that process of the body rejecting the baby and the baby being born into this new world. It's almost like your material body is rejecting your spirit now because it's getting ready to move on. And the earth is going to take back that material that belongs to it. That's your body. Your body, you know, the old saying, ashes to ashes, dust to dust. Your body is going back. And so gravity seems to just have a hold on you. It's like, you know, you see little old people and they're all bent over. It's because gravity is in the process of taking back that body. But their heart and their spirit are moving upwards and looking up because spirit gravity, which is a concept that I think is unique from the Arantia book, I have never heard it anywhere else. And that is the reality that spirit gravity will pull your spirit ever upwards towards the center of all spirit reality, which is paradise. So spirit gravity is in the process of taking your spirit up, and material gravity is in the process of taking your body back. And now, you know, you get a new body, the Marantxa body, not quite as dense and heavy as the material body. And through these seven mansion worlds, it gets tuned up. Tune-ups, series of tune-ups, less and less. So you're dematerializing. I just love that. That's neat to think about. And it's neat as you get older, you know, and you start to suffer the pains of old age and whatnot, to think about that you get that new model on the other side. That's pretty cool.
Well, and we can quite literally imagine it as being something made of literally 570 threads, you know, that are the warp. And imagine that that's all getting woven, but to start out with, we really only have one thread with a lot of material, you know, woof threads trying to hang on to it. Of course, that doesn't work so well. And so as we spiritualize, as we put in more of the spiritual threads, you know, in order for the cloth to have enough form to be, you know, an entire weaving, we can just, you know, keep replacing threads. And we do this 570 times, just, you know, seven times through the mansion worlds and another time after the life in Jerusalem, but then continuously for another, you know, 560 lives approximately, you know, to go and do that. So this is quite an involved process, but an entirely, if we're willing, I think it's an entirely enjoyable one. Because what is one of the things that they remind us of that's hard for us to imagine? Even though it gets to be more difficult, even though that teaching is true in that sense, the side that is often overlooked is that we have become stronger and we have become more cheerful. We more cheerfully, you know, accept the tasks of our emplacement.
Mm-hmm.
We understand that this is all not only for our good, but the good of the universe. And we begin to see where it's leading. We begin to suspect, my God, I really am going toward God.
I really am.
Yeah.
How amazing.
Hard to imagine in this life sometimes, but really. Yeah.
Well, we have another caller. Let's take a caller and then we'll read I think it's the last section, isn't it, Andre?
Yeah.
Maybe the second to last.
Okay. Jerusalem citizenship, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Area code 302, you are with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, everybody. This is Chris Lapine out in Delaware.
Hi, Chris.
Well, Chris, my goodness, an old friend.
Hi,
how are
Andre.
You?
Hi, everybody.
Good.
Hey, you.
Hey, so I've been kind of in and out of the call. I've been doing some yard work, but I wanted to get back on because it's such an important topic, and I was kind of intrigued by the metamorphosis that occur as you go from life to life. But for those, I've been doing a topical study for a study group that I'm doing right now, and the topical study that I was doing was really on survival. And I thought it'd be helpful if you haven't touched on it, and I don't think you have in depth. I thought it might be helpful if I just made a couple comments about that, about what
Please
the Urantxa
do.
Book's. Sure. So for those of you who are new to the Urantxa book, I think that, and this is where I was in 1980, but my big question was, well, okay, is there life after death? And then, okay, if there really is life after death, then how do I do that? How do I get there? What, you know, what do I have to do? And, you know, as we know, it depends on who you talk to. And the the answer we always heard was you have to join our group, not your rancher group, but, you know, what I always heard was you have to join our church, our club, our group, our league, whatever it is, and you have to
right.
believe everything we believe. You have to do everything we say to do, and then you are worthy for us to be an intermediary for you. So that's
yeah.
that's what I was always told. So for those of you who are new to the Rancher Book, the Rancher Book teaches that there is nothing that is going to get in the way of your relationship with the cosmic God if you really desire it.
So important.
You're not going to have instantaneous success, but one thing, and I think it's in the beginning of the book, it states that it doesn't matter what happens. It doesn't matter, you know, let's say educational problems, your life upbringing, you know, any trauma you go through, any physical problems. It doesn't matter that if you are sincere, if you are sincerely responding to that leading within you, that leading that says, I want you to go in this direction and be positive and help people, heal yourself, heal the planet, then if that is your true desire to any degree, then you're in.
That's, yeah.
And, you know, the keys to the kingdom, the Rancher Book says, or the keys to this cosmic journey are faith. It's sincere. Do you sincerely want to do that? And I think of it as, you know, there's only one thing that we can do. You know, we have lots of gifts, right? But the only thing we can do is make a decision. That's all we can do. And when I think about the spiritual life, I think of it as, you know, I'm here and I'm starting to experience something in me. And all I can decide to do is to experience it more. Or I can also decide to do something with what I've been given, whether it's inspiration or so. You know, it's like the Quakers say, you come move into the light, or I want to be held in the light. And I think that's so true, that you can either decide to move into the light, and also you can decide to do what the light's telling you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, our universal Father, the Creator, loves us so much that it's fair. I think that he understands all of the issues that we're going through, everything, and please understand that, everybody, for those of you who are kind of in that borderland of experiencing this, that if you're just getting started, that, you know, your Father knows all the issues that you're facing, the problems you're facing, and he's completely sympathetic and wants to help you. And I was just always amazed at the simplicity of it and the incredible power of it. But I think to Andre's point earlier, that it's just the beginning. Okay, so you are going to be, you know, I look at it as you enter eternal life the moment you decide to follow the leading, and that means right now. Eternal life begins right now, and as you guys were pointing out, all we do is we change bodies when we're resurrected, and it's just such a, and I think that salvation is as simple as that. If you are, you know, the Rancher Book says that the secret of, and this is a paraphrase, so don't hold me to this.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty close. Thank you. I think it's pretty close. And it says that, now I have to preface this, that when the Rancher Book says survival, it means that you woke up after you died. That's survival. You survived death. Not with your body, but with you, whoever you are. And the Rancher Book says that the secret of survival is the choosing and the doing of the Father's will, of the divine will. You might not think of God as a father. You may think of God as a mother or a fort. It's, the point is, are you willing to follow this spiritual leading wholeheartedly? And if, when you do, when you wholeheartedly make the decision to follow that leading, to seek it and follow it, then you are creating this soul that you guys probably already talked about. And what I like so much about the Rancher Book is not only is it incredibly simple, it's just so intuitive. You wouldn't make something unfair, that it's so fair. and that the Urantia book also gives us the most stupendous, fulfilling, and invigorating description of life after death that we have. It's just astounding.
Yeah.
It's so true.
And I've just been thinking about that a lot as I go through this topical study. It's just astounding what we've been given. By the way, everybody, it does not matter if you believe in the Urantia book, accept the Urantia book, believe to any religion. All the Creator cares about is if you are willing to help out in this divine plan with both hands, both feet.
There you go. Well, thank you. That was awesome.
Thanks. You're welcome. Yeah. You're welcome.
What a wonderful thing is
personality, too. You know, Chris Lapine, goodness gracious, it's been so long since we've crossed paths, and isn't it amazing where life takes us? You know, a long time since you tread the paths of Boulder here, and now I'm sure your family is getting close to being raised by now, isn't it?
Well, Leah is 8.5 years old. She's a Girl Scout camp right now, so
she's
come along. I'll catch up with all of you at the conference in Amherst. And I heard you guys talking about it, and really, it's a tremendous experience. And if you're a brand new reader, you can decide to get involved to the degree you want to. You can attend whatever workshop you want to, whatever singles groups, whatever's available. It's you're not being forced down this tunnel and through this program of education. It's just an incredible festival of your Urantia book readers. There's really nothing like it. It's quite tremendous.
It's a cornucopia of different things to enjoy and
mm-hmm.
different thoughts and, personalities and workshops. And
yep.
It really is great that way.
You can find your tribe.
And,
yeah.
Chris, I just want to thank you so much for pointing out that this endless life is not exclusive, and it doesn't belong to any one group to give.
Yes.
To give to another.
Absolutely.
And to decide who gets it and who doesn't, or only those who do this and thus and such, get it, and those who don't, well, they're doomed. No, and if you read the Urantia book, that the loving God, the Urantia book is going to introduce you to God like you've never been introduced to God before, and you're going to find out that God is not an angry monarch whose chief delight is protecting his subjects in wrongdoing and seeing that they're adequately punished.
It's so true.
That is not God. And that is some human's idea of God. And, we tend to anthropomorphize, we always have, God and taking him down to our level because we're angry and wrathful and judgeful. God must be that way too. But he's not. And that's the good news. God is perfect, and his love is perfect. And so, the mercy of God extends infinitely. And the only thing that stops us from receiving that love and that mercy is ourselves, our capacity to receive it. The more we open up to it, the more it comes into us. The more we open up to it, the more it flows out of us. So we become like a conduit for it, that love of God. And that's what's going to change the world, is when we show that love and that
mm-hmm.
faith and that joy and that peace, that understanding, that mercy to each other. Then we make it real for each other.
I just love that follow. That's something else that I thought of is that, it's a lot of people say, well, that's pretty easy. I can do anything in my life. I can be horrible and be resurrected, and it's all good. And that's not true, because another thing I'd like to point out is that your Urantia book says that it's your sincere desire to follow the divine leading. So, if your only sincere desire is to help yourself and to be selfish or not even pay it. I mean, you can also, the Urantia book points to that you can also just be just apathetic and uncaring. You can you can just completely reject divine leading and not be a bad person in the least. You can just say,
yeah,
that's nice. I don't care. I'll do my thing. But it doesn't mean you're a cruel, mean person. It just means that you're completely uninterested. And if you're completely uninterested, you don't go on either. That's another. But
you get
to
choose.
The thing is,
that's important.
You get to choose. And the thing is, the Ranch book says that if you sincerely want it and you want to follow that divine leading, you're in. And that once you do that, then you should not focus on, am I saved? Because that can become a selfish act where you just keep focusing on it. Am I saved? How developed am I? And it's
right.
And I love you know what the Ranch book says about the teachings of Jesus, that it's a religion of the original is a religion of self-forgetful service, completely self-forgetful service. And, I think it just shows so much trust in us to let us have free will, to let us try. And, the Father believes so much in us. We have so much potential. He sees where you will be in 100 years, in 5 minutes, in 1,000,000 years from now. He sees mm-hmm. the tremendous potential in you. And you have unbelievable resources, and you have unbelievable potential to progress. And I think sometimes it can be a little daunting, this huge Ranch book journey that's painted. But, the thing is, the joy, the only place you are is where you are right now. And the joy is in growth and serving other people. And mm-hmm. and if you are, let's say you're a fundamentalist Christian, let's say you're a fundamentalist Buddhist, Muslim, doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you believe. If you sincerely want to follow that divine will, then the fruits will bear out in your life. And that's, what you were saying before, Paula, that divine seed, that love, true love and kindness and service is the only thing that's going to improve this world. It's not going to be technology. It isn't going to be more education. It isn't going to be new social structure. It's going to be this divine virus of love that the Arantia book points out. That is the only possible thing that can change the world. A lot of people are deeply into the saying that, well, if everybody read the Arantia book or the Bible or the Gita or whatever. No, it's that act of realizing that you are a child of God, accepting that, accepting eternal life, and acting on that and following that. Nothing else matters. Right. Once you have that, everything else is more super fuel for that. If you have the Arantia book, we look at it as super fuel because you have the knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
But
well,
I won't
read
talk anymore because I love this
and,
so much.
And,
I'll keep talking forever.
Well, Chris, do you want to hang on here with us as we read this last section?
I will.
Yeah,
okay, well, guys, go forward. I'll be able to hang in for a little while longer, but
okay.
Thank you so much. And
thank you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you, brother,
yeah.
friend.
You bet. Great pleasure. Thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Chris. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
So, Andre, I'll let you have the honor of reading
Wonderful.
About Jerusalem citizenship.
Sure.
The last section in this paper.
Yeah, section 10, as you said. The reception of a new class of Mansion World graduates is the signal for all Jerusalem to assemble as a committee of welcome. Even the Spornagia enjoy the arrival of these triumphant ascenders of evolutionary origin, those who have run the planetary race and finished the Mansion World progression. Only the physical controllers and Marantia power supervisors are absent from these occasions of rejoicing. John the Revelator saw a vision of the arrival of a class of advancing mortals from the seventh Mansion World to their first heaven, the glories of Jerusalem. He recorded, "And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire. And those who had gained the victory over the beast that was originally in them, and over the image that persisted through the mansion worlds, and finally over the last mark and trace, standing on the sea of glass, having the harps of God, and singing the song of deliverance from mortal fear and death. Perfected space communication is to be had on all these worlds, and your anywhere reception of such communications is made possible by carrying the harp of God, a Marantia contrivance compensating for the inability to directly adjust the immature Marantia sensory mechanism to the reception of space communications.
That's parenthetical, by the way.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. That's
Paul
a little
also
comment.
Had, yeah, it's one of the few parentheticals in the entire book. There's very
right.
few of them in there.
Right. Sorry to interrupt. I just wanted to say that. Go right ahead.
No problem. Paul also had a view of the ascendant citizen core of perfecting mortals on Gerasim, for he wrote, "But you have come to Mount Zion and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to an innumerable company of angels, to the grand assembly of Michael, and to the spirits of just men being made perfect. After mortals have attained residence on the system headquarters, no more literal resurrections will be experienced. The Marantia form granted you on departure from the mansion world career is such as will see you through the end of the local universe experience. Changes will be made from time to time, but you will retain this same form until you bid it farewell, when you emerge as first stage spirits, preparatory for transit to the superuniverse worlds of ascending culture and spirit training. 7 times do those mortals who pass through the entire Mansonia career experience the adjustment sleep and the resurrection awakening. But the last resurrection hall, the final awakening chamber, was left behind in the 7th mansion world. No more will a form change necessitate the lapse of consciousness or a break in the continuity of personal memory. The mortal personality initiated on the evolutionary worlds and tabernacled in the flesh, indwelt by the mystery monitors and invested by the spirit of truth, is not fully mobilized, realized, and unified until that day when such a Gerasim citizen is given clearance for edentia and proclaimed a true member of the Marantia Corps of Nebanon. An immortal survivor of a juster association, a paradise ascender, a personality of Marantia status, and a true child of the Most Highs. Mortal death is a technique of escape from the material life in the flesh, and the Mansonia experience of progressive life through 7 worlds of corrective training and cultural education represents the introduction of mortal survivors to the Marantia career, the transition life which intervenes between the evolutionary material existence and the higher attainment of the ascenders of time who are destined to achieve the portals of eternity. Sponsored by a brilliant evening star.
Sponsored by a brilliant evening star.
Yeah.
I love that.
A very high spiritual being in the local universe, a being who, we're told, have a special headquarters on the worlds of Gerasim and on Gerasim itself. And these beings, it's hard for us in a mortal estate to really differentiate between levels of spirituality. But we know that it's a high attainment level of some of the seraphim to ascend to this level. And we also know that the brilliant evening stars are qualified to represent the bright and morning star in the councils of perfection on Salvington. They are essentially in the courts or the various committees or anything else, they essentially can represent Gabriel. And Gabriel is the chief executive of the entire local universe, not unlike Michael in spiritual status, only lacking in creative attributes. That to me is a big wow. we're getting some pretty high beings speaking to us about the nature of our progression and trying to cheer us on in this wonderful race, who all who will enter willingly will certainly succeed. They're just trying to cheer us on.
You get such a sense of that pageant, that, you know, that milestone, and how they cheer you on. And they love in this section, or I should say he, the brilliant morning evening star, loves to tell us that that we already knew these things somewhat, because John the Revelator saw a vision of it. And John's vision, he describes, "And I saw, as it were, a sea of glass mingled with fire, and those who had gained the victory over the beast that was originally in them, and the over the image that persisted through the mansion worlds, and finally over the last mark and trace, standing on the sea of glass, having the harps of God, and singing the song of deliverance from mortal fear and death." So many times, you know, you hear people give John the Revelator credit for things that are really terrifying. And the Urantia book explains that some of what John saw terrified him only because he didn't understand what he was seeing.
Mm-hmm.
And also other great sections of his wonderful revelation were lost. And so we have this fragmented description of John's revelation, but it's not whole, and so it could hardly be understood, and it really doesn't have tremendous value because we only have parts of it. But they explained
right.
to us that, you know, he was given a great revelation, but he was seeing in some instances things he didn't understand. So you know, the Urantia book mentions John several times in this way, and gives us his take on things, and tries to explain some of what John went through. And of course, John was John Zebedee.
it didn't all get to us. You know, he had this vision. He wrote down most of it, and through 1900 years. Much of it got lost, and so we only have it partially. This is really quite remarkable about the Urantia book, is that if you give it half a chance, it will speak to you. You will have the conviction. You know, at least I'll say with 99% certainty, if you give it a chance and read it, it will give you the sense that it has to be what it says it is. It's so beautiful and so internally consistent. And it's not just the internal consistency, and it's not just the beauty, but both working together give you a sense, well, goodness gracious, you know, how could this not be what it says it is? And who would write this pretending that it was and not take credit for it? So it's just an unusual work, and those of us who've had the privilege of studying it for, you know, in our case, more than half our lives, it's really been transformative. It's certainly changed my life for the better, and it's really designed to change the world for the better, one person at a time, giving us not only a sense of our sonship with God and the brotherhood and sisterhood that makes all men and women brothers and sisters for us, but also giving us a sense of place in the universe and our citizenship in the universe, and the idea that there is something to be achieved. And once we understand our spiritual childhood, we can begin to grow up. And there are some interesting lessons that are given in the book that I think can lead us to understand that if we take our service role seriously, we will begin to grow up.
Right. You know, and just to recap, you know, this series on life after death, it is a metamorphosis of a sense, in a sense. And you know, I love the metaphor of the butterfly, the analogy of the butterfly, that what we have to go through, you know, just like a baby goes through embryonically, goes through those changes. An embryo goes through a series of developmental stages within the womb until it's ready to be born. And that is a great transformation. It's a metamorphosis from a single cell that divides and divides again and divides again and then becomes this full-fledged little human being. And this little human is born then into the big world. And then this human goes through these stages of development and metamorphosis until it dies. And then it is born again into the next world. And we've talked about struggle and difficulty and adversity and how we, you know, push through that and how that gives us tremendous value. And there's a little story. I may have read it on the air before. Doesn't take long, but I love it so much. It's the story of the butterfly. And it says, sometimes struggle has a purpose. One day a small opening appeared on a chrysalis. Butterflies make a chrysalis and moths make a cocoon. A person sat and watched for the butterfly for several hours as it struggled to force its body through that little hole. Then it stopped and did not appear to be making any progress. It appeared as if it had gotten as far as it could, and it could go no further. So the person decided to help the butterfly. With a pair of scissors, the person opened the chrysalis. The butterfly then emerged easily, but it had a withered body. It was tiny and had shriveled wings. The person continued to watch, expecting that any moment the wings would open, enlarge and expand to be able to support the butterfly's body and become firm. It never happened. In fact, the butterfly spent the rest of its life crawling around with a withered body and shriveled wings. It never was able to fly. What the person, in sincere kindness and goodwill, did not understand was that the restricting chrysalis and the struggle required for the butterfly to get through the tiny opening were the one's way, were God's way, of forcing fluid from the body of the butterfly into its wings so that it would be ready for flight once it achieved its freedom from the chrysalis. Sometimes struggles are exactly what we need in our life.
Yeah.
So we covered that concept. That, you know, everything we achieve is a process. We don't die and become perfect. Death adds nothing to you except the knowledge that you survived it. You know,
amen.
We don't just die and become perfect and live on a cloud playing a harp forever. You know, many of the stories that we have, there's truth in them. But it's only partial truth, just like John's revelation. And the beauty of the Urantia revelation is it fills in those missing pieces. So now we have a context to understand, okay, so the next life, the seven mansion worlds, is yet another metamorphosis to yet another level of existence. And we struggle, and we learn, and we grow, just like we do here. And each
very
level...
Much so.
Yeah. So, you know, and I don't, perhaps you want to recap some things too, Andre, that you feel are of value. That I think Chris brought up a very good one. You know, eternal life is not ours to give, nor ours to judge whether someone
right.
else gets it or not. I think that's hugely
right.
important.
I think it is. And you know, judgment is pointed to as a group function anyway, and eternal judgment is something that isn't conducted even by our Creator. Our immediate Creator does not judge us, only loves us. That is left to the higher tribunals, and it's only if there is really nothing, no will whatsoever to want to be part of this universe that we don't go on. So the default position really ought to be, as Chris was suggesting, that we are going on, and to take it for granted, not in a selfish way, but to take it for granted as a gift, in the same way that you graciously receive a gift from someone, to say, you know, I do understand I've been given this, and I do understand that this gift, like perhaps the gift of a college education or the gift of a set of encyclopedias or the gift of being given a wonderful relationship with somebody, entails certain responsibilities. You accept the gift and you begin to understand, well, let me use that gift to move forward in my life and to help others with that gift, you know, as well. So you do understand that, and you do understand that it's a foundation. The whole point of the gift is yes, to give us eternal life, but not to give us eternal life as selfish beings, but to open us up to this beauty and this true life that is, how do you describe it? We're being invited to be part of the richness of what the universe really is. And what the universe is really founded upon is love. And that's the invitation, is to experience that. And if we have any desire whatsoever to experience a universe that is founded on the highest quality in the universe, love, the quality that makes up what the Universal Father and what all divine beings are really actuated by, then we ought to just take that for granted and move toward it, like a moth to a flame.
Yeah.
But we won't burn up, not in that way.
Well, because it's light, but not heat.
And we might burn, but we won't burn up ourselves, we'll burn for our fellows, we'll burn to exercise that love that's been so freely given to us. It's a hard one to remember in every moment, but the idea is to just try and try again, and we get better and better at stretching those wings.
You know, I think you make a very good point, too, that, you know, we should take for granted that we are. As Jesus said at one point, the son has not to earn the right. The son or daughter has not to earn the right of sonship. You're not born into the world and then beg your earthly father to accept you as his child. You don't have to beg your father to accept that you are his child, and you don't have to beg God to accept that you are his child. God loves you. You are, by right of birth, a child of God. Take that for granted. However, Jesus also said, you may enter the kingdom as a child, but the Father requires that you grow up by grace to the full stature of spiritual adulthood. You know, so you don't want to take for granted that, you know, you just as you have these muscles on your body that can atrophy if you don't ever use them, you have a spiritual muscle. You are a spiritual being, and that spirit, that soul, that, you know, in fact, you are an embryonic spirit, and that is your soul. The soul is the nucleus of your spirit, the embryo of your spirit. You have to nurture your soul. You have to feed your soul to make it stronger so it can grow up by grace to full stature spiritual adulthood. And that takes effort. And most of those lessons happen, as we said earlier, in your dealing with human beings every day. You know, other personalities, other individuals that you deal with every day. And that is how you mature your soul, by focusing on spiritual values, divine meanings and purposes. You know, material things are fine, but they come and go. Their days are numbered. Material, you can't take, you know, your car with you. But you do get to keep your relationships and your experiences.
Right. And I think you make excellent points, and that those are earlier lessons, and these last two sections that we read. The thing to keep in mind with this is that we probably already have, by this point, by the time we've reached the seventh mansion world, the vast majority of us will have made the decision to always do the will of God. That is to say, to always do the best that we can to do the will of God, and to never have the desire to not do the will of God. That's what the nature of fusion with that fragment of God, that adjuster, really means. It means we've come in complete synchrony with the will of God for us in our lives, and we're willing to go forward with the plan that the adjuster has for us. We're willing to listen to that still small voice that we will hear clearly on the mansion worlds. And that's something we didn't talk about, but that voice that we really can't hear, that very few of us hear in this life, I certainly don't pretend to hear the adjuster's voice. I do feel from time and time being led in certain directions, but, you know, I really don't know. The idea being, if we make it to a certain stage, we do perhaps hear the voice of God in our life, but most of us will not clearly hear it until we arise on the first mansion world. And then, divested of our material body, we will hear it. And the idea there is, you know, are you willing to consistently listen to that voice and to try to obey that voice? You know, at first, probably not all the time. You know, some of us maybe more than others. It doesn't matter. As we keep living through that life and we see what works, and we see that following that voice works so much better in the long term than not following that voice, at some point we get the idea, you know what, I never want to not follow that voice. Well, we make that decision, I'm going to follow that voice from here on in, no matter what. And when we get to that point, then that's that point where, as we began to read, we are, you know, the super angel of supervision and the archangel, you know, come with the seraphim to say, here is a beloved son. And that goes for former men and women as well. You know, we're all the sons of God. It's not a sexual term. It's not a gender term. It's gender neutral. It really means we are progressing children of that loving Father. And when we're told, this is a beloved son in whom I am well pleased, that pleasure is knowing that choice that we made on the fifth or the sixth mansion world, or before or after, wherever we make it, signalizes the fact that we are absolutely destined to paradise and beyond. We are going to make it at that point. There's nothing, we've made the decision that there's nothing that will ever get in the way of our finding God. And that itself is pretty amazing.
Yes, that itself is. And, you know, I love that you bring up the still small voice, because so many times, you know, I hearken back to the words of Jesus that touch me so deeply. He says, you know, men seek for God with weary hearts and aching feet, all when this very God lives within them. And, you know, we talk about the still small voice and we seek it outside of ourselves. And it's not outside of ourselves. It's within us. And so often we ignore our own best judgment and our own guidance and then live to regret it. And I think, you know, we spend a lifetime learning to trust our own instincts. And trust is still a small voice. And, you know, it's a whisper. It's not so obvious while you're in this dense material body. But it's a process, again, of learning to tune in and hear that guidance and feel it and allow it, you know, to and allow yourself to trust it. To just trust it. Not be so afraid. Afraid of everything. You know, afraid of the world. Afraid of others. Afraid of God. Oh, you know, to me, that just breaks my heart that people are afraid of God. Because isn't this life hard enough? And we don't even have God in our corner?
Right.
You know? I just, to me, that's the worst fear of all, is the fear of God. Because, you know, this life is difficult, and the way to get through it is to trust. And faith is a sublime trust in the goodness of God. So to just trust that you do the best you can, you make these decisions, and you live to your highest understanding of truth, beauty, and goodness, and things will work out. Maybe sometimes you'll fall into situations that are just seem unbearable, but you get through them. And on the other side of it,
well, and that faith, yes, and you know, you bring up that point of having faith in God as a loving God, that there is nothing to fear in God. And I think that's very, very important. And, you know, and Chris brought that out, and we know our good friend Dave Tucker, who joined us as well, and all the people on the board understand that as well, that this God is no one to fear, and that this phrase, this phrase in the second last paragraph is telling. It says, the mortal personality initiated on the evolutionary worlds and tabernacled in the flesh, indwelt by the mystery monitors, a fragment of God, and invested by the spirit of truth, this spirit that bathes the whole world and leads us into all truth, that our dear Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth, as he ascended back to his former estate, you know, bestowed upon us, all of that has helped us. And they say that personality is not fully mobilized, realized, and unified until that day when such a Jerusalem citizen is given clearance for Edentia and proclaimed a true member of the Melancia Corps of Nebadon, an immortal survivor of a juster association, a paradise ascender, a personality of Melancia status, that soul stuff, and a true child of the Most Highs. What they really mean to say there is, you know, that moving through Jerusalem citizenship is all about really realizing who we truly are. That mobilization of the personality, that realization, that unification is really so that, you know, just like you were saying, that fear that distracts us. Well, that fear is largely gone through the mansion worlds. That's gone. But we're still not fully unified, and we still need to really begin to realize, once we get rid of the things that are the mark of the beast, who are we really? And that's what Jerusalem citizenship is all about. It's about taking a long, long life, probably a few thousand years, to realize who we truly are. And when we finally understand that and have been shown that by all the wonderful teachers and by this rich life of living with people, you know, from all sorts of worlds on Jerusalem, that will give us the sense of who we truly are. And only then can we fully socialize and realize we can get along with just about anybody.
And now
we're
on our way.
Yeah.
Well, I hope, friends and listeners, thanks for hanging in here with us for this series. We sure have enjoyed it. Hope you have, too. We'll be off on a new topic next week and hope to have some interesting guests. Mark Kaufman is going to be coming on, I think, on the 31st of May as a repeat guest. We'll love having Mark again. And thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it, and we will be back next week on The Cosmic Citizen. Thanks, Andre. Thanks to all of our callers, Dave Tucker and Chris Lapine. You guys are great. So good to have you on. And thanks for the
Love
listeners on our board. You bet. Love you. Till next
time. Bye for
time.
Now.
Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.